This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore with our basketball insider, Mike Grenier. And the Celtics have won their 18th. Everybody knows that by now. Mike, did you stay up all night?
Pretty much. Rick, like till 3 a.m. or so, just kind of like taking it all in, all the various perspectives that were being thrown out there, all the various analysis, whether it was Boston TV stations, Boston radio guys like Cedric Maxwell or national networks chipping in their viewpoints, you know, me tossing it back at TV with my own viewpoints almost out loud. You know, those 18 championships, Rick, I think, well, you and I are of the age where we were little kids when Bill Russell won the early ones in the late 50s.
Yep.
And then we were teenagers when they were winning them with Russell and Havlicek and Heinsohn in the mid-60s and so forth. And certainly I was covering the Celtics in the 70s when they won their titles in 74, 1976, and 81, 84, 86 with the Larry Bird era, and, of course, the Kevin Garnett team of 2008 with Ray Allen and Paul Pierce. And then it's been a bit of a stretch. They've come close the previous 2 years, Rick, as we know. 2022, Golden State was just a little too good for them because Curry and Klay Thompson were still pretty much prime in their prime and playing well. And then last year, you know, reaching a seventh game against Miami, and then otherwise they would have been in the finals. So great to see them break through last night. Well-deserved. They were definitely the dominant team, not just in the finals, but, you know, posting a 16-3 record overall and an 80-21 record for the season is really the sign of a dominant team.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's going to be interesting to see where the Scribes put the Celtics, this Celtics team, in their place in terms of great teams of the NBA. But I want to start off, so much to uncover here, and I'm looking forward to this whole deal. I want to start by, I'm going to play the old word association game with you, Mike, and I'm just going to throw some names out there to start this thing off. So I'm going to start with Jason Tatum.
Let's start with Jason Tatum because obviously, you know, we got to talk about Brad Stevens after I talk about Tatum because Tatum was, I thought, by far the most emotional Celtic last night. Well, Al Horford was too because, Rick, I got to say, my wife and I saw Al Horford play in the NCAA Final Four in 2007. that seems like an eternity, right? Obviously. And I think he was with the Atlanta team, the Hawks, in 2008 that lost to the Celtics in the playoffs. So that was the beginning of a 16-17-year stretch where he did not taste an NBA championship until last night. I think it was like 186 playoff games without a title, second only to Kyle Malone. And so to see him be so exuberant and with his family on the floor, his wife, his kids, his father, Tito, it was such a joy to see him absorbing it all because there's one guy that could really appreciate what it takes to win the NBA title, to stay in shape for that long, to be that mentally committed to play that long, and then to contribute in a big way in a postseason where the biggest guy, Kristaps Porzingis, missed basically 12 or 13 of the 19 games. Horford had to play a lot of minutes, and he exhibited tremendous just overall balance in his game, playing both offense and defense. So deserving of a championship. But getting back to Tatum, he was the most emotional guy, and I think that's because there's probably more pressure on Tatum as the quote, unquote, superstar of the team, along with Jaylen Brown, certainly, but more so Tatum, I think, is the face of the franchise. And I think he faced a lot of pressure and a lot of undue criticism for previous defeats in the playoffs, and it was such a sense of relief and joy for him, a combination of those two emotions, to finally win it. And he was so gracious in talking about his buddy Jaylen Brown winning the MVP of the finals when he actually could have and maybe should have won the MVP. But his overall performance, his shot making wasn't all that great in the finals. But, man, he ignored all that, and he played great defense, 10, 11 assists on a couple of games, 9, 10, 11, 12 rebounds in a couple of games. He chipped in great defense. We got to mention that, too. He chipped in every conceivable category, and that's what makes a champion, as we know.
Well, I think
in every category. Right?
What's really interesting, Mike, and I really appreciate your perception on this, because I threw the name Jason Tatum out, and you immediately went to emotion, and into Al Horford. And I don't think anybody could disagree with, any Celtic fan could disagree with your assessment of that, because it's so cool. We've read so much about what a nice man he is, what a dedicated athlete he is, what a family man he is, and how he treats the younger guys. And in fact, I saw a quote by Drew Holiday that said, I'd go through a brick wall for Al Horford.
Oh, yeah, I think they all would. I believe that both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum mentioned in the postgame last night about how much Horford's mentoring them through the early years meant to them in terms of their blossoming as players in these last 3 or 4 years. And blossom into championship athletes. That's because Horford is so even-keeled, and he knows that it's a long haul and so difficult to win a championship, to get through 82 regular season games, trying to stay healthy, and through the ups and downs, the bumps and the bruises, and the ups and downs of winning and losing, and then to maintain that intensity throughout the playoffs and to finally win it. I think Horford was just sort of maybe the calming influence for those younger guys throughout their early part of their careers. And then finally, you know, both Tatum and Brown were ready to win it. And they broke through this year. And we also, too, Rick, at some point here, we have to mention the contribution that Drew Holiday made. You can make a, you know, Brad Stevens made a great point in the postgame last night. And, of course, it's Brad Stevens was a roster builder along with Danny Ainge, because Ainge obviously picked up Jaylen Brown and Tatum. And Stevens finished the package off by acquiring Porzingis and Drew Holiday and Derek White. And you got to say that all those guys were major contributors. But when you look at it, if we don't want to really talk too much about individual awards, but when I look at Drew Holiday's performance in the finals, he shot 53% overall. He shot 42% on threes. He was far better than either Brown or Tatum in those categories. He averaged 14.5 points. And when you mix in his defense intensity, his defensive effectiveness against Kyrie Irving and against other guys, and you got to say that Drew Holiday really was the kind of overshadowed by Tatum and Brown, but he was just as responsible as anybody for winning that championship. Just a great player, and it's his second championship, of course, because he won one with the Milwaukee Bucks in 2021.
Well, he had very few turnovers. What's interesting is that if you take really any one of those guys out of the lineup, you got a problem, especially with Porzingis, you know, being wounded, and Holiday. I agree with you. It's just so great to see old fashioned Celtic basketball.
Well, yeah, and that's the point I made about Brad Stevens. He kind of was at the, you know, he was at the National Network on the desk after the game last night, and they asked him about various team members. He said, and he shrugged it off. He physically shrugged, and he said, the individual award, who cares? It's about playing together and how this team played together, and that's the reason they won. That's the reason they won 80 games and lost only 21, won the title 4-1. And obviously, we have to include Mazzulla. I have to be the first to admit, Rick, that I was doubtful about whether he could pull this off after what happened last year and some of the points this season where we thought they were having a dip in the way they were playing or the way he was handling the team. But you have to give Mazzulla credit. Players certainly seem to love his approach. And Drew Holiday specifically mentioned when he came over, Mazzulla explained exactly to him what he expected of Holiday. And Holiday at that point was a 33-year-old veteran. And he took it all in, and he played the way that Mazzulla wanted him to play, and was hugely responsible for being a big part of that championship team. So we have to give Mazzulla his flowers, as they say these days.
Well, before we get to Jaylen Brown, I have a hypothesis. And my hypothesis is this. I think Jaylen Brown certainly deserved the MVP of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right,
and
right.
I think he was a, if I were voting, he's a co-winner of the MVP for the finals. So he got his award.
Yeah.
But who's the MVP of the team? And I'm going to, my hypothesis is that it is Jason Tatum.
Oh, yeah, I think it is. Because when you look at the whole 101 games, it's a lot of games, huh, Rick? 101 games.
Yeah.
I guess I'd have to look at the numbers to see. He played the vast majority of the games. And not only that, there were some games in the playoffs where he played 44 and 45 minutes out of the 48, and he got beat up inside. He could have gone to the foul line a lot more than he did. And he pretty much avoided, he picked up, what, one technical, I believe. I think he might have picked up, or maybe none. But he pretty much avoided complaining to the officials. And he just kept his nose to the grindstone. I thought he played tremendous defense when he was guarding Doncic, when he was guarding the big men inside. Just did a great job. But, yeah, I'd have to say the overall most important player on the team for 101 games was Jason Tatum. As good as Jaylen Brown was this year, Jason Tatum, you know, obviously had a great year, was named first team All-NBA, which says something about his overall play, you know, offensively and defensively.
Now, Tatum, first thing he did in the post-game interviews was give credit, Jaylen Brown, the first thing he did in post-game interviews was give credit to Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
And I listened to a little bit of Nitwit Radio today because the hypocrisy of some of those guys. Today they're all saying, you know, oh, well, back in the day they were calling for the breakup of, you know, whoever they are. Not the guys who were actually talking and did it.
Right.
They were calling for the breakup of the, right. But look at where they are now. And it's like, and who was calling for it? You guys.
Yeah, that's right. It certainly was. They certainly keep reversing their field. I mean, it's so funny, Rick. And you know, Rick, we shouldn't go too far without mentioning how good the Celtics defense was throughout the playoffs, but particularly in this five-game series against Dallas. All four games, they held Dallas to less than 100 points. That's really hard to do in today's NBA because you got all these guys shooting threes, and, you know, obviously Doncic and Kyrie take as many threes as anybody, as any duo in the league, but to hold them to 88 points last night, and to 99 one game, and to 90 in another game, I mean, they held Dallas to four games of under 100 points, and that's tremendous. And I can tell you right now, Rick, the three-point shooting, Luka Doncic shot 24% on threes for the five-game series, including three for his last 24 on threes. Kyrie Irving, 27% on threes, okay? P.J. Washington, who was the big factor for them during the regular season and postseason, 27% on threes. And Derrick Jones, a starter who you hardly heard about during the finals, 25% on threes. That's four key players for Dallas who were shot well below 30% on threes. That speaks to the completeness of the Celtics defense and getting closeouts on the three-point shots and just guarding them nose-to-nose for the bulk of the series. I thought that was a huge factor in them winning.
Last night, the switching on defense was incredible, quick, fast, and efficient. And what I liked about last night's game, Mike, was that there was no drama. The Celtics just had this thing from start to finish.
They did. And how about, I think the symbolic of how good it was going for the Celtics and how good it was going to end was Peyton Pritchard hitting like that 46 or 49-foot jump shot. You know, I mean, Doncic missed a free throw with 4 seconds left. They just turn the defensive rebound, give it to Pritchard, and he just fires away from 48. And Doncic's the one that came over and put up a little token defense. But, you know, you don't expect the guy to hit one from half court. And it's the second time in the series, of course, that Pritchard hit a long shot at the end of a quarter.
Well,
so it just gave the Celtics a 21-point lead. And you could see the whole bench and the starters elevate, in terms of energy, even though we were going to the locker room, they just elevated in terms of energy when Pritchard hit that shot.
Well, other snapshots I see, Derek White, being smashed into the floor and still getting the ball. I think it was to Tatum and Al Horford, you know, lunging on the floor for a ball. And not Tatum. I keep saying Tatum, but I mean Brown. And Jaylen Brown, we have to get to him. But the snapshots of the hustle, the all-around play, both sides of the court. And I think as much improvement as I think Jason Tatum has shown on defense, Jaylen Brown is tremendous on defense.
Oh, yeah, I think, especially in his finals, Rick, I think he took it I think he knew going into the series that he was going to be guarding Doncic a lot. Both he and Jrue Holiday, and they took turns at different times. And I think Jaylen Brown made it a priority not just to be an offensive scorer, rebounder, assist guy, but certainly it became a major priority for him to guard Doncic and to limit him as much as possible. And, you know, Doncic went to the foul line a lot. But, you know, last night, Rick, Doncic only had 7 points with like 10 seconds left in a half, and then he made a three. He had 10 points at the half. So he was basically rendered ineffective during the body of the game, or the part of the game where the Celtics staked themselves to a 21-point lead by halftime. I mean, they kept him quiet for the first 23 and a half, 20, almost the 21st 24 minutes. He had 7 points until he hit a late three-pointer in the second quarter. So, yeah, he ended up with, what, 27, 28, whatever it was. He had a better second half, but at that point, the Celtics were preserving their lead at 18, 20, 16, 26, whatever. So they established that defensive intensity on him in the first half, and that was a lot of Jaylen Brown. And, of course, Jrue Holiday slides. He guards anybody. Jrue Holiday, he's ridiculous. He can just
yeah.
And he's so relentless and fearless. And, you know, we've talked about this, Rick, and Marcus Smart, we loved his defensive intensity, and he was named Defensive Player of the Year. But Jrue Holiday, of course, I think was a step up. And you know what? I saw a quote from Jalen Brunson, who we love around here, obviously. His father played at Salem High. But Jalen Brunson, a first-team All-NBA, said a couple days ago that Jrue Holiday, he couldn't believe that Jrue Holiday has yet to be named Defensive Player of the Year any season in the NBA. He says because Jrue Holiday is the best singular defender in the NBA,
wow,
according to Jalen Brunson. That's
wow,
quite a compliment coming from Brunson.
I want to ask you now about a couple more things that I want to talk about. But we talked earlier about the bench and how during the season Celtics were able to use 8, 9, sometimes 10 guys or more. But I think in the playoffs they were able to keep their starters out there, their starting six, if you will, for longer minutes because their minutes had been managed so well during the regular season. And so they could shorten the bench to 8 players.
Right, and I think, you know, if you look at any team in the NBA Finals, I think every coach is a little leery of playing the bench a lot because their legacy or their reputation is going to be based on how they did in the finals, and they don't want to be accused, coaches I'm talking about in general, don't want to be accused of, oh, you used the eighth or ninth guy and he shot 2 for 10 and it cost you the series and it cost you the playoffs. Well, no, I think you're right. Mazzulla managed those minutes regular season and even into the postseason, but yet he was still, this is where I liked Mazzulla's coaching in this series, he was judicious in the way he used both Pritchard and Hauser. When Hauser went 0 for 5, he pulled them. But last night, Hauser hit a couple of big threes,
yes,
right, Rick?
Yes.
In the first half. So he kept him in there, and then I believe he hit a two-pointer, I think, on a drive, gave him 8 points, and yet he didn't play that many minutes. But you look at the end of the night, those are 8 big points.
Yep.
And, you know, there was that other game where Porzingis wasn't available, and Tillman played like 16 or 18 minutes. He hit a three-pointer, which is unusual for him, and he played pretty solid defense. And Luke Kornet, unfortunately, I think would have played a lot more, but he injured his hands early in the playoffs, and not much was said about it. But he really didn't play at all, really, in the finals because he had an injured hand. So Mazzulla was scrapped a little bit with maybe a couple of key guys that would have gotten more minutes, but they were injured. So, you know, he did a great job, I thought, of managing the bench and managing the starters, Mazzulla, that is, and that's another reason they won. I think he outcoached Jason Kidd. Although I really believe, obviously, the Celtics had better talent. They were going to win this series, and everyone got all panicky when they lost by 38 points in Dallas. But it shows you, Rick, right, we've talked about this. You and I have seen championships to go back to the 1960s. One game has no carryover to the next game. Perfect example, Dallas won by 38 points in Game 4. The Celtics won by 18 in Game 5. The math, Rick, you're a mathematician, that's a 56-point turnaround. 56-point turnaround after losing by 38. So it just goes to show you that every game is its own entity, has its own drama, its own key elements, whether it's good shooting, bad shooting, rebounding, someone steps up, or Kyrie fades. And how about Kyrie? He did absolutely nothing in this series. He had one good game. And really shot it poorly again last night, 5 for 16, I believe, or 5 for 17. He didn't do it. He just did not do it.
Well, again, you know, we talked to Celtics about Celtics defense, and I love when you start talking math, Mike. That sounds awesome. I want to ask you about something we've talked about during the season and in the past is chemistry. And We have read about the chemistry, I think, of the six guys who are on the floor the most. And it is a brotherhood. They respect one another. They love one another. And they certainly play well together. But when you get to the bench, and we talked about Pritchard and Hauser and maybe Cornett and maybe Tillman, but the end of the bench, when you get down to the guys who don't play, and but they're part of practice. They're part of pushing these guys in practice every single day.
Right.
What, your experience in covering the Celtics, what does that mean to have all 12 or 15 guys on the same page, and how often does that happen?
Well, I tell you what, I've seen two teams. Well, I've seen many teams that it's happened to over the years. Like, we go back to the 86 Celtic, and of course, that great second unit with Bill Walton and Jerry Seasting and Scott Webb and that whole group. Those guys, I remember, because I covered those games on a regular basis, the bench actually felt like, hey, sometimes we're better than the starters. We're better than Bert Parrish. In a kidding way, in a joking way, in practice sometimes, when they scrimmaged, they would go hard because they felt they had a great second unit, and that was a great example of chemistry and bonding together. Now, I think the Milwaukee Bucks of 3 years ago, because I know Patrick Connaughton on a personal basis, he used to tell me about how great they would call themselves the bench mob. that's the nickname they gave themselves, the bench mob that would relieve Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, who started, and how they stuck together as a group, and yet they were interacting with the starters and to keep a good team chemistry. I saw the same thing with this group. I saw Hauser last night talking, for example, about how great it was to have Al Horford as an example, to have Tatum as an example, a role model, to have Jalen. I saw he specifically talked about that. And Peyton Pritchard, who was borderline a year ago, wanted to be shipped out to play for another team because he wanted more playing time. But then they got close to making the finals again, and he kind of changed his mind, and he played a big role on this year's team. And he I think, exemplified another guy who was on the bench who felt good about being part of their second unit. And, you know, all those other guys, the Jordan Walshes, the guys who didn't play much, who played up in Maine, that would come back, they had their moments during the season when the Celtics had injuries or when Missoula wanted to rest guys, where they got to play some serious minutes. And you could see the joy that they had last night in watching the starters win it all, because they did play a role, like you said, in practice, in keeping Tatum sharp and keeping all those other guys sharp in practice. They exhibited great joy last night, I thought. You could see it in their close-ups of their faces. You could see it in the locker room celebration. Hey, they were a part of this, too. They didn't play as big a role statistically, but it takes more than five or six guys to win a championship. We saw that with the Patriots when they won those titles. And who can ever forget that time when Tom Brady, and instead of being introduced player by player about the Super Bowl as a group, I thought, you know, I thought of this last night. I don't know if the NBA would ever allow it, but this Celtics team, if they could have, when they introduced the starters, they would have run out from the bench as a group. That's what I think of their chemistry. In other words, I think they could have done a two-up on, followed the Patriots' example by coming out as a group. I actually thought of that last night because I thought of how close-knit they are and how cool a moment that would have been. But maybe the NBA, you know, protocol doesn't allow players to come out and do that. They have to be introduced one by one. I have no idea, but it would have been fun to see something crazy like that happen.
I can still hear Pat Summerall's voice saying, choosing to be announced as a team, the New England Patriots. And I went crazy when I heard that. You got to be kidding me. That's awesome.
I still remember them coming out of the tunnel.
Yep.
You know, in their own way, the Celtics come out of the tunnel the same way, with the same sense of purpose, whether the number one guy like Tatum or the number two guy like Brown, or, you know, the number 16, 14 guy, or 12 guy like Cornette, or whoever. I mean, they pull together. Now, the interesting follow-up question, Rick, is can they keep this team together? Because Jaylen Brown last night mentioned, he says, we do have a window. That was the quote. We do have a window, meaning we do have a window for more championships because of the age that both Tatum and Brown are.
And the contracts.
So we shall see. Brad Stevens obviously is going to try to keep this team together. He's going to have to tweak it because certain guys, I mean, Derek White's going to be in for a big, they've already talked about extending his contract. We didn't even mention how important he was, right, Rick, last night? He hit some key threes. He got some teeth dislodged on that. That was a hard hit.
I hated it. They kept playing that thing over and over again. I said, stop showing it. Oh, it's
exactly.
Awful.
And, you know, he waved off any medical attention.
I know.
Basically, once he knew it wasn't an emergency, and, like, he in the post game, he dismissed it. He said, you know, I was going to keep playing. No, he's another big part, I think, of that team chemistry, Rick. I think Derek White, he wasn't nearly as good a player a year or two ago as he was this season. I think he made a conscious effort to improve his three-point shot, his floater. And, Rick, really, you know, if we're talking all defensive players,
mm-hmm.
My goodness, he was about as good as anybody on that
yep.
team defensively. He's better than most players all across the league defensively. How about when he went up and blocked a seven-footer shot?
Right.
Like Derek Lively? Come on. I mean, he's a 6'4", 6'5" guard. And to me, he extends himself on defensive end. He makes sure things are going well there before he tries to chip in on offense. And he's a terrific two-way player. I mean, so we hope that Brad Stevens will lock him up or extend his contract. I think he's got two more years on his contract, but they really want to lock him up for a couple more years. And obviously they gave Jrue Holiday an extension. Tatum's in for a huge raise, but we knew that. Everybody knew that a year or two ago. So it's going to be a matter of keeping that core group together. And because like Jaylen Brown said, they do have a window to win, whether it be like the 80s Celtics win maybe three. Who knows? But if they can keep this team together, the core group, they certainly have a chance. You wouldn't count them out next year against anybody.
Well, and the other thing is,
if
they could build Porzingis into the million-dollar man, the $6 million man, the bionic man, I think they'd go a long way. I just think Porzingis, it's so sad that he gets hurt so often.
Right, and Rick, you know, you bring up a great point because I've been wondering about Porzingis throughout. Well, even during the regular season, off and on, we talked about his injury status. He played only 57 of the 82 games, and he did miss. He got credit for playing in seven games in the series, but he really only played in six because he got injured after a quarter and a half in a Miami game, and then he basically missed 65% of the postseason. And he's a 7'3" guy who's a huge factor when he is in there. If he can't play, and that's been his history for 7 years. I think it's a legitimate point to bring up. Do you want to keep him beyond this season? In other words, like his mark, I've been thinking about this for the last few weeks. His market value is at an all-time high. They were coming off a championship. He averaged 20.5 points during the regular season. He had that huge game one in this series, the Dallas series, where he scored like 20 points, and he had a huge impact in the first quarter. And so his market value has never been higher, and he's only 27, 28 years old, I believe. So if you're Brad Stevens, do you think about dangling him in the offseason if you can get a great player or an outstanding player in return, a guy who could start for you and a guy who could maybe play 70 games a year and not get injured, who has a history of not getting injured? Or do you keep Porzingis and take a chance that he's going to be healthier next year? I don't know that you can take a chance on Porzingis, Rick. I mean, the Pollyanna view would be that, yeah, he's going to be okay next year. He's going to play 75 games. But the reality is he's yet to do it in a 7 or 8 year career.
Well, there's
play a lot of games.
There's a parallel there, too, with Robert Williams III. So it is interesting.
Yeah, well, he certainly played. He's played more games than Robert Williams III, that's for sure. And unfortunately, all those. Brad Stevens looks like a genius right now, but of course some of that is injury-driven because Marcus Smart hardly played all year. Malcolm Brogdon hardly played all year. Robert Williams hardly played all year. It's sad that they were injured, but it was beneficial for the Celtics, and the guys they got in return, you know, contributed so much by playing so many games.
Yeah, and Grant Williams has sort of faded away.
Sure. Grant Williams, I believe, was at the game last night, and, you know, I was surprised Paul Pierce wasn't. I didn't see Paul Pierce last night, but he certainly was driving the Celtics early in the series by going to the leprechaun in the middle of the floor and stomping on Kyrie Irving's jersey or whatever he did. He did some funny stuff in trying to sort of get the Celtics going in a funny way. So, But yeah, it's great to see those old Celtics come back and see the new Celtics. And how about Rick, Bob Cousy?
Yeah.
Bob Cousy a few days ago said something, I'm 95 years old and I have 1 foot in the grave and I want to see this team win one, at least one more before I die. And I wonder how Cousy felt last night in Worcester, Massachusetts, watching that game.
Well, the other thing, too, is the Celtics organization, I believe it starts with Brad Stevens, has made overtures to get as many former Celtics tied to Boston into the Garden all year long.
And I think Mazzulla did the same thing, too, Rick. Mazzulla reached out to
it was, yeah, Mazzulla, yep.
To come back as much as possible.
Yep, and that is, you know, that is so cool. Finally, Mike, I want to wrap this up by asking you about your view on seeing Shaughnessy and McMullen, Jackie McMullen and Dan Shaughnessy, in post-game talk and maybe what they talked about. Because Shaughnessy, I love his writing, but certainly Jackie McMullen, I respect her basketball knowledge more than anything.
Well, yeah. Well, Shaughnessy, of course, is, you know, he also covers the Red Sox a lot. You know, I cover the Red Sox a lot, and I would see him in all the playoff games and World Series games and all that. So, and of course, he did become the beat man for the Celtics in the 80s when Bob Ryan became a columnist. And I can't wait to see a Bob Ryan now that he's retired. And he's in his 70s now, and he writes occasional pieces that are still masterpieces in basketball writing. And I can't wait to see what he has to say about this team in comparison maybe with some of the other Celtics teams. And you're right. But Jackie McMullen brings a great viewpoint to the forefront, because she talks about all the things that we just talked about. And can Brad Stevens keep this team together? She talked about the salary cap and how hard, difficult it is to keep a team together these days, and she's on point with that. And Shaughnessy talked about how dominant the Celtics were this season, and he felt they were going to win. And it's great to hear them, because they've seen the other championship teams in the 80s, certainly, and in 2008. And you know, they don't quite go back to the years that I saw in 74 and 76, but certainly shortly after that.
Finally, Mike, last thing, where does this team rank, from your view, in terms of NBA history?
Ooh, not just Celtics history? Okay.
Yes, not just Celtics history, NBA history.
Oh, my goodness. I guess, I'll start with Celtics history. To me, the best Celtics team ever was the 1985-86 Celtics, 50-1 at home, counting the playoffs, 40-1 at home, regular season. I think they won it in six games, though, not five, right? So this team here outdid them, 4-1. I think the competition might have been better in 86. I guess you'd have to look at some of those Lakers teams, and the 85 Lakers were awesome. What was that 76ers team that went 72-9? And then there was the 76ers team with Moses Malone that went like 4-4-4, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those were great teams. I'd have to, Rick, I think you'd have to give me time to study it a little bit more to see where this team would rank.
Okay, that's fair enough, Mike.
They might be top 10, top 7 or 8, but there's certainly, we'd have to go back to the 70s and the 60s, to see how great those teams were. I mean, personally, I have a fondness for the 68-69 Celtics, because even though they had a pedestrian record of 48-34, they went all the way and beat the Lakers at home in Los Angeles to win it all on a team where not only did they go 48-34, but Bill Russell had announced his retirement it was player coach and was announcing it, and Sam Jones was injured and carried through to the playoffs and had a great, and they won with a badly injured, aging team. And that's one of my favorite teams of all time, regardless of record.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's fair, and we'll keep that on the back burner, because we'll do this again. We can have
sure.
You know how they have the hot stove leave in the wintertime? We can have it in the summertime for the Celtics.
It's really hot. It is a hot stove. Out
and I think I want you to, I don't want you to research, but maybe do a little homework on the statistics of this Celtics team, because I've read that they have the best offensive whatever it is output that the league has ever seen since they've been keeping those stats. So I think that has something to do with it. And you talk about competition. the athletes today, the travel today, the number of teams today, and so on, that has to be taken into account as well. But I don't disagree with you on anything. I love those, all those teams you met. I'll even go back to the St. Louis Hawks. Yeah. I mean, with Bob Pettit and Cliff Hagan, those guys were fantastic.
Right, and you know what? It's so funny that the Celtics team took, and you'll, I mean, a lot of Celtics fans would get riled up over this, and you and I would too. Complaining the Celtics didn't play the best teams in the NBA, didn't play Denver, didn't play the Knicks, who were hot. But that's not the Celtics' fault. Those teams got knocked off by other teams who were better.
Yeah.
And so the Celtics, they had to play the cards they were dealt with, and they did a pretty darn good job. I mean, the Indiana Pacers crushed the Knicks, and they came in flying high, and the Celtics beat them four straight. and you know, so come on, let's give credit where it's due. The Celtics faced the competition head on. They lost only they won 10 consecutive playoff games at one point. That means home and away. That's very hard to do. They won, what, six or seven straight on the road. They won 16 of 19 games. That's about as minimal as you can get in terms of trying to go sweep an entire playoffs. You know, it's pretty darn good.
And I think one more thing. This is never going to end. We could talk all night, Mike.
Sure.
but one more thing that comes to my mind is the Boston sports media is relentless and brutal. And that goes into social media. It covers radio stations, television stations, and newspapers. And in my mind, for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to withstand all of that, I don't think they've been given enough credit.
No, I agree. I think sometimes you could see it bother Tatum when people said that he wasn't a champion and all that. And sometimes at the podium he would react to that. Because I think it wasn't a few days ago, he was made aware of the Celtics' history, how many games they won and how close they were to being the greatest Celtics team in terms of postseason play and record. And he said, I wasn't aware of that. He says, but, and that's good to know, he says, but some of you guys are going to say, prove it again next year.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, so he was pretty instructive, I guess, in that regard, and I guess a little sarcastic, and he got up from the table. But he was pointing out the obvious, that social media and other, I think a lot of sometimes it's not mainstream media, but there's a lot of social media out there, and every player or an ex-player in the league has a podcast, and they all have viewpoints. And some people get outrageous because they want to be heard, and they say that Tatum's a horrible player and Jaylen Brown's a horrible player. You're just going to have to face that, I guess, and you have to have a thick skin. And I think that one of the great things that both Tatum and Brown have done is develop a thick skin, right, Rick? They both developed a thick skin to that unwarranted criticism.
I also think that Boston media, in particular, have these sports figures, I don't know what they are, commentators maybe, or editorial, I don't know, I don't even know what to call them, because I don't want to be specific and get sued here. But they don't know a hell of a lot about sports, and what they're doing is trying to make money for themselves in the radio stations or the newspapers or whatever. And so they take a game like we saw last night, and they will pick apart every single play. And
or else they will pick apart, Rick, certainly the 38-point loss.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, if you've ever played a sport, for God's sakes, you know, it's a continuum, and you can't it's just, you have to understand the effort, the strategy, and all this other stuff. Criticism, yes, I think professional players are open to criticism, certainly.
Of course.
You know? Yep. But the scrutiny in Boston, I'm not even sure it's scrutiny. I think it's just, I don't know, maliciousness at sometimes.
Oh, well, I mean, Rick, let's mention Tony Maserati. We can't stand him. I can't stand him. He actually, tell me on what earth this makes sense, where he said that the Celtics championship would be hollow because it's not, because they didn't play the 1986 Celtics. On what level that makes sense? That is no different than Kyrie Irving saying the earth is flat.
Yeah.
It's really
I didn't hear that one. Oh, my God.
It's no different than saying that the earth is flat. How on earth can this year's Celtics team play, you know, the 86 Celtics, or some people, you know, Rick, we mentioned great teams. At some point, we'll talk about those Bulls teams with Michael Jordan, because those were certainly great teams, and we should mention that. Phil Jackson had quite a run, and they won 6 titles, and some of them were very convincing. So at some point, well, the future time, we will talk about certainly mention the Bulls among those great teams.
All right, I'll leave you with this. This was a most likable team.
Very. Very likable team. Each of these players now, because they make so much money, Rick, they have their own egos and they have their own agendas. But somehow, I think, between Brad Stevens and Mazzulla, who I want to give a lot of credit to because I've been the first one to criticize them, I think those two guys, they were able to hold their players' egos in check and develop them as a true team. I think I'll always remember this current Celtics team as a true team that went 80-21, that won convincingly by playing team ball. And I think that's the point that Brad Stevens was making last night in the postgame. He said, I don't care about individual awards. Who cares? This team played together. And I think that was exhibited in all 101 games this year, even the games they lost.
Basketball insider Mike Grenier with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.